Well, Parliament is an important part of the Constitution. In the aftermath of the Revolution Settlement of 1688 to 89. And it's fundamental to the Constitution largely because it's the main arena for raising taxation and financing the wars of the 18th century. Monarchs who have quite grand continental ambitions, as William III did in wanting to contain Louis XIV, are more or less required to summon Parliament. And thereafter, it remains a fixture in the political process in a way which simply wasn't the case before 1688. The monarchy remains powerful throughout the 18th century, but it's very much a parliamentary monarchy. A successful government is one which has both the support of the monarch, but also a working majority in the House of Commons. A working majority in the House of Lords, which is remains a very neglected part of Parliament, could usually be relied on. And so within that arena, party politics develops at quite a rapid pace. It developed initially during the reign of Charles II and during the exclusion crisis of the late 1670s and early 1680s, when the two main parties of Whig and Tory come into existence. And in the generation after the Revolution of 1689, parties were the main focus for political loyalties across Britain. Whigs were very strong supporters of the Revolution Settlement of 1689. They backed a parliamentary monarchy, they were willing to break the hereditary succession, and they were keen to give enhanced rights to their allies, the Protestant dissenters, and they're also fully committed to the Protestant succession, which under the Act of Settlement was due to come in on the death of the last Stuart, Queen Anne, which eventually happened in 1714. By contrast, the Tories place a much greater emphasis on the royal prerogative, on hereditary rights of the sovereign, on legitimacy and of tradition. They're uncomfortable with 1689 because one monarch, James II, was replaced by another, William and Mary, who had no necessary right to succeed to the crown. They'd taken the crown in the lifetime of James II, and that remains a real difficulty for the Tories. The Tories are also unambiguously attached to the Church of England, and their first loyalty, arguably, was to the Church of England rather than the Crown. So the period down to 1714 is often one characterised by historians as marked by the rage of party. And the Whigs win in the long term. The Whigs dominant in the party politics of the first two Georges, that is the period from 1714 to 1760. The Tories are shunned by the Hanoverians and they're cast out into the wilderness and dismissed as a party which is actually Jacobite and not loyal to the dynasty. You can't trust a Tory in government. So the Tories are in the wilderness, and what one sees in the course of the 18th century is a gradual dilution of party differences as Tories splinter and only begin to appear again in government from the period after the accession of George III in 1760. What the Tories bring to the Hanoverian monarchy after that date is a sense of loyalty to the crown, of stressing the rights of the sovereign, and realising that central to their understanding of British identity is a powerful king. So Parliament remains central to the Constitution throughout the 18th century, primarily for financial reasons, and party politics, which rage furiously between 1689 and 1714, certainly remain thereafter, but with the Tories permanently in the wilderness, resulting in a loss of their identity over time. And Toryism as a label is only really used again from the early 19th century. During the reign of George III, most politicians claimed to be Whigs.